Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and that is a song called The Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson, and that is a very appropriate song for tonight's show. Tonight I'll be interviewing MoMA, who's going to give us some of the Dogon wisdom and the history of healing from ancient Egypt, and give us a real foundation of Western spirituality. So I'm very excited for that. You are listening to New Realities and New Realities Radio. This is a new time every Tuesday night, 7:30 Pacific Time, 10:30 East Coast Time. And this is a takeoff on my television show, which is seen every Monday night at mnn.org. You can also check my website, which is newrealities.tv, where I have a listing of many of the show's past guests. So let's get on with tonight's show, and mostly my show has been about understanding new realities, how the mind creates reality, and where it is we are going as a planetary spiritual race of evolving beings. MoMA, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Al.
Yes, Alan, yes. How do you say your whole name?
Professor MoMA Selu Sualaye.
And that's originally from what country are you from?
That's from Mali in West Africa.
Right.
Alan, I was born in Sierra Leone, but my ancestry is from Mali. It goes back to about the late 1700s, when my great-great-grandparents, for generations were through Dogon, somehow they converted to Islam. And there is a tradition with the Dogon people that if you are a Dogon, then you must not be a Christian, a Muslim, or a Buddhist, or anything like that. You know, you just have to believe in African spirituality and not become any of those.
Wait, so the Dogon is a tribe? They're a tribe of people in Africa?
Well, you know, they call them a tribe now, but actually they were just a group of intellectual people. And so the name Dogon actually evolved from another name that they call the Telem, which is spelled T-E-L-L-E-M. Now, Telem stood for or stands for communication. So it wasn't really a tribe at all. It was a title that was given to a group of Africans, you know, who came from all over Africa that actually built the civilization in Kemet, Egypt.
Okay, because the Dogons are mainly now known for their discovery of the second star of the Sirius constellation, the Sirius B. I mean, they knew that Sirius existed as a double star before scientists in the West discovered that. That's what they're mainly known for in the West. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, Alan, perhaps your listeners should also know that there's not just one star that the Dogon know about. There's also Sirius C, and possibly a Sirius D. So they know
about. Now, how did the Dogon? Hello, MoMA, are you there? I've been talking to MoMA, who is a professor and scientist and a historian on spirituality, African spirituality. He's just been giving us some basic background about the Dogons, and the Dogons were not necessarily a tribe, but a group of African intellectuals that established the laws and understood the laws of the universe. Hello, Mama.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, we lost you for a second, so sorry about that.
Yeah.
But you were, I asked you, how did the Dogons know that these stars existed long before telescopes?
That's a very, very important question, Alan, and I think it's worth explaining how that happened. One of the things that the Dogons are very renowned for is their ability to actually study the stars and the way they do it. We are to look at some photos about Dogon houses in Mali. What you see is basically a flat kind of a building with a flat rooftop.
Okay.
What they do, a flat rooftop. So what they do all year round, basically, if it's not raining, the high priest, for instance, will stay up all night long. That's where they sleep. They sleep up on top of the roofs, and they observe the stars. So they are there all night. That's their laboratory. You know, like Western countries have laboratories here in buildings where their laboratory is out there on top of the roof. So they observe and observe and observe the skies, and they are able to see many, many things. And there is a science, in fact, that goes along with that. I have called that science black sight. You know, just like you have foresight, you have hindsight, you have insight. So the science associated with that is called black sight, because they are actually seeing, they are using their pineal glands, you know, pineal glands to actually work as an eye. So with this system of looking up into the skies, in which they actually transform their ability to visually see something, they transform that into a spiritual eye. They are able to traverse many, many, many trillions of miles.
So they were able to psychically sense this other star, is that, or saw it on a through their pineal gland? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, their pineal glands were able to actually track Sirius B in its trajectory around Sirius A. So in other words, what they continue to see over the years now, you know, they continue to accumulate data on the trajectory of Sirius B around Sirius A, and they actually drew that the data that they had in their minds, in their heads, on the sand. So,
is the Dogon wisdom still a system of knowledge that's intact for thousands of years, or has it been lost and resurfaced? What's the history of the Dogon knowledge?
Well, one of the things that's so crucial here is that every year, they have initiates. You know, they have children. You know, children are born and then they get to a certain age. Most times it's about, some of the children start about 9 years old, some about 10, 15, and so forth. So the high priest basically take the children and then they initiate them into the system. So they teach them a system. You know, what they teach them actually is a system of concentration.
That's what I want to talk to a little bit later, the system of concentration, but let's just give a little more foundation and history to them and their relationship to Egypt, for instance, or Kemet, as you call it.
Right.
What's the relationship between the Dogons and the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians?
Right. Well, we've got to go back probably about 60, 70,000 years back. This was about a time when Africans were just expanding out into other continents. You know, Africa is where life started, as we all know. It started around Mount Kilimanjaro, you know, in East Africa.
Tanzanian valley there, yes.
Right, yes.
Right.
So it was there that the first humanity started. You know, in fact, the first mother they call Mother Tang, T-A-N-G. And the next one was Father Tang. Now, when you probably remember the name of the country called Tanganyika. You remember that, Al?
Yeah, Tanganyika. Alan? Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's now Tanzania.
Or Tanzania, right? Or
Tanzania. Now, Tanzania was Tanganyika. In fact, in my literature, I don't say Tanzania because it's a misnomer. you know, I keep saying Tanganyika because there's a great history behind that. The reason why the Africans called that country Tanganyika was to actually exemplify the fact that that country represented the home of the first mother.
Okay.
So the Africans were glorifying creation itself, or what I call the transformation of spiritual forces into a human being.
And now, how long ago was that, first mother? How long?
Pardon me?
How long, how many years back was that origin?
Well, some people estimate it to be 3 million years. Some people say 1 million years. Some people have even gone as far as 15 million years. So it varies, you know. The history behind it is like pretty much very controversial. That's the reason why I don't go much with history, because every researcher has its own timetable, and carbon dating also is not very accurate either. So it's
Do you believe in Atlantis, the lost continent of Atlantis, and all that?
You know, Alan, no, I don't believe in it at all.
Okay.
Simply because of the fact that humans have the potential, you know, just like we are today. I mean, we see the space shuttle. We see all these satellites going up. We see all of these explorations into the universe going back and forth. Now, these are creations by human beings. And we have the potential. We have the means to make things happen. So when we start to refer to extraterrestrial beings, you know, I'm sort of taken aback by that. You know, being a Dogon, and I know people sort of sometimes refer to the Dogon as the fish people and all of that stuff. Well, I don't believe in that either, because I don't have any of that quality within me. But yes, still, I have the same intellectual power as, you know, any Dogon over there. So,
but you don't think we came from the stars originally? You think we're
from
the
Earth?
No, we
didn't. See, that's what I was going to go into, you know, about mother tongue and father tongue. Now, pardon me?
Yeah, tell me about that, yes.
Yeah, okay, definitely. Now, there is something in the universe that is basically called or is creative. Okay, first of all, there's the dark universe. Now,
what's that?
If you do remember, the dark, D-A-R-K. The Bible in Genesis 1:3-4 talks about, you know, and God said, let there be light. And so prior to when God said, let there be light, it was all dark. So light came out of darkness. And so,
well, they're still talking about 95% of the universe being dark matter. Yes. So.
Right.
Okay.
That's very correct. Exactly.
Yes.
So we only have a minute portion of the universe that is only a particle of stellar state. So what happens is that inside this dark universe is all pure energy. This is where the seat of energy is. And then the question is, we ask, well, what drives energy? Now, what drives energy is pure waves. And then what comes out of waves? Now, what comes out of waves is numbers. And that's
numbers?
The reason why,
are you saying numbers?
Yeah, numbers. You know,
okay.
0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so forth. That's
okay.
The reason why, Alan, you know, numbers are infinite, waves are infinite. And
okay.
So when you look at this, then you are actually dealing with pure energy. So out of this pure energy, through what we describe as permutation processes, permutation, which is a changing process. Now,
okay.
The different waves continue to have different forms of changes. In fact, the Dogon call this the Dogon cosmogony. I'm sure you've heard about cosmogony before.
Cosmogony, I know cosmology.
No, cosmogony, C-O-S-M-O-G-O-N-Y, cosmogony.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's a form. I'm looking on your website, which is dogonuniversity.com, and it says it's the formula for creativity, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So with this cosmogony, there is this formula that the Dogon have, the Dogon cosmogony formula, which is basically, it's a very simple formula. It starts like this. It starts 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you have a space, and then it goes 9, 8, and then you have space, and then you have 27, and then you have space, and then it goes 99-100. Now, that's the whole formula for creation, Alan.
I don't understand it, what you're saying. I mean, I don't understand what those numbers mean, though.
Right, okay. That's what I'm going to explain.
Okay,
now,
good.
Yeah. So when you take a circle, for instance, the center of the circle is zero. That's where all the potentials are. And then out of this circle comes a wave, a sine wave. Okay, the sine wave will go up to have an amplitude, which is 1, and it crosses the line and then, at 2, and then it goes down to the bottom of the, to touch the circle at the bottom, which is 3, and then it ends up on the circumference of the circle, which is 4. So you have a complete circle formed within, a complete wave formed within the circle. Then
would that be like as if you dropped a pebble in a still water, that kind of wave that's created?
That's what it is. That's what
okay.
it is, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So you have
I'm
that ripple coming out. Now, when the potential goes out of the circle, which is now we have 1-2-3-4, which has already terminated at the circumference of the circle. Now we go to 9-8. It's out of the circle. Now, this wave that came out was a full wave. But by the time it gets to 9, it cuts as a half wave. So now we have a half wave, and it goes to 8. Now, 8 represents challenge. So this half wave is challenge. So now, mm-hmm. instead of a wave, we have what they call flux, F-L-U-X.
Okay,
you,
flux.
You follow me,
yes.
Alan?
I think so. I'm not sure where you get 8 from. Where do you get, I mean, I understand the wave going to 4, but how does it get outside the circle?
Okay, that's what I'm explaining. It got outside of the circle because now we don't have a full wave. If we had a full wave, then it will go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and so forth. But we don't have a full wave.
The power gets less, you're saying? The force of the wave decreases?
Exactly. You know, there's no longer the potential to keep it whole.
Okay.
So it
goes in half. In half.
It
the
goes
power
in half,
of the wave
right.
loses. Okay. I think I'm with you. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it cuts it up in half. And so this half is called a flux. F-L-U-X. So now it goes from 9 to 8. We have that flux. 8 represents challenge. So this flux is challenge, and then it propels it. So now we have a pushing force. It's like a centrifugal force. The centrifugal force pushes it, and then it goes to 27. But because it's coming from 9 to 27, the half wave is multiplied 3 times, because 9 times 3 is 27.
Okay.
You follow me still?
I sort of follow you, but what does this all have to do with the formula for creativity?
Exactly. That's what we're getting into. Now
okay.
we have a half wave. Now it goes, we have 3 half waves. We have, the flux is developing. Flux developed. So from 27, now these 3 fluxes are now sent to 99, because from 27 we go into 99. So now we have 9 times 11, which is 99. So we have a whole bunch more fluxes, and it gets heavy. The wave cannot carry that anymore. So at this point, it transforms into matter. So this is how matter is formed. Matter,
M-A-T-T-E-R. That's where you're going
yes.
with it. Okay. So from pure energy to movement to condensation to the density of matter, I think is
you've
what you're
got
saying.
It. And this is how particles are formed, Alan.
Okay. Okay.
So when a particle is formed at 100, it's so heavy, and because no particle exists in pure energy, you will never have pure particle in pure energy. No way there will be a particle in pure energy. So then the dark universe will kick it out. At 100, the dark universe kicks it out, and now you have a star is born. So every 9 cosmogonic counts in the universe, there is a new star being born. It's like a woman having a baby after 9 months. So the cosmogonic universe has a baby star born every 9 months.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you. So how does that translate to human creativity?
Okay, exactly. So the same process that happened for a star to be born was the same process that happened a million years ago or so when Mother Tongue appeared, and she appeared on the eastern side of Mount Kilimanjaro. What happened was, in fact, we can't go back a million or 3 million years ago, but according to anthropologists who say that during the Paleolithic era, which is about 850,000 years ago, during
right.
that era, there was just one one continent as a whole. You know, there was no North America, South America, and no Asia.
Right.
All the continents were one.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And during that time, there was hardly any sunlight penetrating the planet Earth because it was all so foggy and so, you know, like we are talking about flux. It was so foggy and rainy. You know, there was so much rain, so much rain. In fact, they said during that period, humans were living on top of plateaus because
What I heard about that time is that there was a thick cloud covering as the way
right.
clouds surround Venus, and a lot of those clouds was our oceans that had not descended yet. A lot part of our oceans were in those clouds that were forming.
Yeah, well, that's where the rain came from, you know, the clouds that existed then. So
right.
at that period, the sun kept forcing itself through on the planet. So it was at that time, now this is millions of years ago, or a million years ago, this way before the Paleolithic era. At this time, the waves coming from the sun, you know, the waves and particles, because the sun is made up of waves and particles. So the waves and particles coming from the sun, got into that same permutation ratio with the flux or the clouds that were on the planet. So
uh-huh.
it came to a particular permutation ratio, which only exists once in the universe. So when a particular permutation ratio occurred for humans, then Mother Tongue appears. So there was no notion from the Bible that in fact God created Adam and Eve. That is just a story. There's no scientific basis to it. Now each creature and each plant have their own ratios. So for instance, the permutation ratio for humans is different from the permutation ratio for animals, is different from the permutation ratio for plants. So each one has its own permutation ratio. Yeah.
Is this Dogon science, or is this your own stuff?
No, it is Dogon science. Yes, it is Dogon science.
You learned this as an oral tradition going back thousands of years back to your ancestors, right?
Right. Actually, like I was telling you earlier, I learned this because my great-great-grandparents had actually come to me and indoctrinated me or anointed me as a high priest. So I just automatically know this.
So you're a high priest in the Dogon...
Exactly, right.
It's not really a religion, it's a science in a sense, right?
It is a science, yes, it is a science, Alan.
So what is its relationship to Egypt then?
Okay, the relationship to Egypt is that when all of these people from all parts of Africa, you know, from the south, from the east, from the west, and so forth, they all kept moving. Now, this is over 50,000 years ago or so. They all kept moving north because
okay.
there was no other place they can go south. So they all just kept moving north. So when
why couldn't they go south? What was wrong with
them? Well, you know, there were already Africans in the south. You know, after Mother Tongue... went through Mother and Father Tongue, went through the creation process, and then the all that area of Africa started to overpopulate. You know,
I see.
People
so
just
they had to
everywhere.
Go north towards
right
towards North Africa and then into Europe and into
and
Asia.
Europe and there. Asia, yes.
Right.
So okay. that's what happened. So as they kept moving along, when they got to Egypt, and you know, most of them traveled by the Nile River. So
right.
the Nile was a resource for them. And then so when they got to Egypt, suddenly they realized that the Nile had come to an end. See?
Right.
So those who came from the source of the Nile, and then they realized that the Nile had come to an end, so they just said, okay, then this could be the end of our journey. And
right.
that's where most of the Africans actually stayed until, you know, again that area started to get populated. Then they moved to Asia and then to the north and so forth.
So what? And then did they already have the science intact by then, or was that did that come later? The science of the
Dogon. Alan, this is you know the questions you're asking are very very important. Yes,
okay.
Alan. In fact, a British researcher did some kind of intense research. I think in the 1950s. His name is John G. Bennett. John J. Bennett.
Uh-huh.
He wrote The Masters of Wisdom.
Okay.
You know, I don't know whether you will get this book now. You know, it's out of print. But if you can investigate it, it's good to have this book. But he wrote in The Masters of Wisdom that during the Paleolithic era in Eastern Africa, in places like Uganda, Kenya, Tanganyika, he says Africans during that time had a power to kill and bring back to life. They had a power to go to heaven and come back. So, I mean, Africans had been involved in this process of creativity and intelligence for hundreds of thousands of years.
So to the Dogons, are they the keeper of then all that African wisdom, are still with the Dogons?
Yes, they are. In fact, at the moment, they are the only people in all of Africa that have been so dedicated to keeping this science. No other African, you know, tribe has been able to reach that level of commitment. Yes.
So the Dogons now really exist only in Mali.
You know, Alan, no, there are Dogons in Sierra Leone, in Ghana, in you know, many places. But the point to make about this is that you know, just like Western science, Western civilization, you know, everywhere Western civilization goes, you have Christianity, their education, and all of that stuff. So you find now that, you know, the true Dogon people basically have escaped that tradition. But those who live in Mali, I think there's about 250,000 of the true Dogon. They have stayed quite consistent, and they have basically rejected everything that is Western. I mean, could you imagine, you know, those people live in the desert, and there's
right.
no aid organization that they welcome. They don't accept any aid, nothing.
How do they survive? Well, we'll get into that now. You know, I also want to say, you're talking Dogon is D-O-H-G-O-N.
For right.
those, and your website is DogonUniversity.com for people that are
right.
interested in that.
Right, right.
Talk about then now their, like, power for focus and concentration and how they survive in the desert without any help.
Well, one of the things that they have actually trained themselves to do is, like, you know, you see some people in Western countries, they say they are breatharians or whatever they call them,
yes.
you know, that have basically trained themselves to live on very meager resources.
Yes.
So it's the same thing that the Dogon have learned to do. They have learned to live on, you know, if say, for instance, we live here on a pound of something, they will live on maybe 5 ounces of something. So they have grown to, they are mentally, you know, they are so mentally disciplined that anything that is materialistic, even if it is food or it is clothing or it's anything that's materialistic, they are not interested in that at all. And that's the reason, like I said.
So what's their, you said their power of concentration can heal diseases. Can you
right.
tell us about that?
Yeah, well, you know, this is interesting because most of your listeners really have not been exposed to this particular science. You know, if anything, I think it would do people much, much better to investigate the power of concentration because, like I was saying earlier,
yeah.
There are two primary forces in the universe. You have the wave force and the particle force. Now, when you look at particles, just look at a little rock. You know, you take a little pebble. Now, that pebble is going to be sitting out there. It will sit down there forever until somebody comes along and kicks it before it moves. But
right.
the thing about waves is that waves are constantly in motion. And
right.
so what people have to realize is that the greatest potential that they have is their power of concentration. Because this is what happens. You know, in our thinking processes, every time we go through a thinking process, we are accumulating particles that sometimes are accompanied by waves, and so we have vibrations. So, for instance, people are listening to this program now. They are getting sound vibrations, and this
right.
is carried by waves. Now,
right.
when they absorb this vibration through their ears, it goes into their brain. First, it goes into the temporary memory. Now, inside the temporary memory, the particle is going to be separated from the waves. So the particle is just going to sit there. And now the next thing that happens is that temporary memory is going to decide, well, which brain hemisphere requires this information. So
okay.
temporary memory, you know, there are computer systems, you know, we just call them computer systems. Now, this computer system in the temporary memory is now going to probe the left brain hemisphere and then the right brain hemisphere to determine which hemisphere is ready for this information. Now, some people, their temporary memories will go straight to the emotional right brain. And so the information
right.
will go to the emotional right brain, and then pretty soon they are going to say, oh, you know, this is too boring for me, and then they turn the station off. Now, some people will say, you know, their temporary memory will switch on the left brain, and then they will say, this is very interesting. You know, I want to learn more. So this is what happens. Now, the people who go to their right brains, what happens is that the wave potential that's going to drive this information to the right brain is not strong enough. So when the right brain receives it, the particles start to settle. So the particles are gradually accumulating, and then what happens is that the particles end up in subliminal memory. So that now when anything that is complex comes to them, because their right brain had already told them that, okay, things that are complex are not for them, suddenly,
how do we increase the power of our focus then? How do we? What exercises can we do?
Okay, Alan, we have an abundance of information on the website. For instance, the videos that we have put together are really powerful tools that they can use for now to either reinforce their focusing capability or their concentration potential. You know, before I give you the definition for focus, let me just give you a brief explanation about what we have accomplished with this system.
Definitely, yes, tell us.
Yeah. In 2003, a lady, she was 82 years old when she came to the Dogon here in Los Angeles. At the time, she was diagnosed as having the middle stages of Alzheimer's disease. Now, the middle stages, not just the beginning stages, the middle stages. So from 2003, I personally engaged myself working with her every day using the tools. You know, one of them is the Wonder Wheels tools. It's on the site. And the lady is also on the website. You know, they can see her. They are playing the Wonder Wheels games as well. So I worked with her. I documented everything she did. And so as we went along, suddenly this woman, I think we started in September. By February, you know, every day her daughter was bringing her to the Dogon. So in February, she came alone. And I asked her, I said, well, what happened? I said, what happened to your daughter? I said, did she drop you off early? She says, no. She says, I came by myself. I said, what are you talking about? You came by yourself. She says, well, you know, she lives about 10 miles away from where the center was. So she said, I got into the bus. I went north, and then I changed the bus. I got into another bus, came west, and I got out of the bus, and I got into this bus that brought me here. So she said, I changed three buses. I said, no, I don't believe you. I said, well, that's your problem. So then I knew she was into the healing process. So immediately
now, what
I realized,
did you do with her? How did you help her? I mean, I know some of the exercises, but just give us a little taste of the kind of work you do with these people.
Okay, Alan. The way I worked with her was I employed the wave system, wave and numbers. That's what I did.
Okay.
First we started, I told her, okay, we're going to start by counting backwards from 100. She couldn't. So I said, okay, well, let's go down to 50. That's when we started in 2003. Oh, she couldn't. I said, well, let's go down to 20. She couldn't. Well, let's go down to 10. She couldn't. So I said, you know what? I said, well, let's do 5 to 0. So she started, and she was doing 5 to 0. We were on that for about a month or 2 months, just 5 to 0, 10 to 0, and so forth, until she felt comfortable. And then I said, okay, now you're beginning to improve. I said, let's go from 50 to 0. Alan, I couldn't believe it. Once she was able to go from 10 to 0, you know, I mean, it took her about maybe 2 months. From 10 to 0, once she was able to accomplish that, and then I said, let's go to 50, it was just like a piece of cake. You know, 50 to 0, she did real quick. 100 to 0, so we just kept doing that, and then I gave her the Wonder Wheels, you know, so it was two systems. The Wonder Wheels and then the counting backwards, you know, which I call the Dogon meditation. So it was two systems that actually started to work with her. And then on top of that, there's another system which you see the video on the site also. It's called the Dogon Palm Tennis. I introduced her to that, and that is a game where you hit a ball against the wall. You know, you go with the left hand, the ball comes back to you. You hit it again with your right hand, the ball goes and bounces back, it comes to you. And you do your best for the ball not to drop. So we did that for a couple of months really working with her, and she was able to accomplish, I think, something like 20 counts without the ball dropping. So that's when, you know, her two brains, because, in fact, we have a science we have developed that's called mental lacing. Lace, you know, like you tie your shoelace. And that's in the books that I have written right now.
Mental lacing, the kind of interweaving of the left and right brain, you're saying.
Exactly.
Becoming
yes,
a whole
the left
brain
and the right
creature.
Right.
But what does melatonin have to do with concentration?
Wonderful. What happens is that when your left and right brains are not organized, they are not synchronized, even though your pineal gland is producing melatonin at night, it does produce probably the same amount of melatonin all the time. But if your two brains are not synchronized, that melatonin is going to go to waste. But the moment you start to synchronize your brain, the melatonin now starts to go from your pineal gland, because your pineal gland is sitting within the area of your temporal memory. So because your temporal memory now has more control between your two brains, your left and right brain, the pineal gland goes into the temporal memory, and then the temporal memory is able to share that melatonin into all the different organs of your body.
But so how do you get your left and right brain to synchronize, and what's the purpose of the melatonin? Well, how do you get your left and right brain to synchronize? What exercise
Like I said, you know, like you're doing the counting backwards.
Okay.
You're doing the counting backwards. And, for instance, all the odd and even numbers, if you go on the site, you see those numbers, odd and even numbers. You see those numbers, and then, there's so much data that I have. Let me see if I can find the... what happens is that the odd numbers are associated, I think, with the left brain, and then the even numbers are associated with the right brain. I'm not too sure. Now, let me check on that.
I think that's true. The even numbers are the feminine numbers. The odd numbers are the male
numbers. So now when you do the meditation, now you're actually sending, you know, the lace. You are taking the lace from one brain to the other. So you are synchronizing them. So in other words, if you really don't have any problem, you don't have any misses at all during the meditation, then that means that your odd and even numbers are synchronizing very well. And so the impulses are getting to both brains simultaneously. And so in that process, you are actually linked the two together. And so since melatonin is a black, it's sort of manufactured during darkness, so it's associated with the dark universe and therefore waves. So because of that, more waves are involved. And so since numbers are also associated with waves, then the process of transmitting melatonin into the two brain hemispheres becomes much easier, because now you are actually taking the numbers to transport this neurochemical transmitter into your different parts of the body. So
our pineal gland makes melatonin, but do we need to take extra melatonin to help that process?
No, you don't need to at all. In fact, sometimes the artificial melatonin can be harmful, you know, and it's not worthy at all, because, see, here you are taking something that has not been processed through the right channel. Let me tell you why. Melatonin is manufactured through the what you call the curriculum. You know, there's this system of tissues that surround the pineal gland. They call them curriculi superioris and curriculi rostralis. You know, that's a Greek or Roman name that they have for them. So
now,
one is...
go ahead.
One is the input. And the input, Alan, you don't let people know this. This is why concentration is so important, and this is why melatonin is so important, natural melatonin. Now, during the day, you are exposed to sunlight. And this sunlight is bringing to you universal intelligence. You know, the intelligence from the universe is coming directly into your brain.
Right, through your eyes. That's why I don't like to wear sunglasses, because I feel I'm missing some of that universal food if I wear sunglasses.
Exactly. That's very true. So during that time, when this information is coming into your brain, it's not being processed right away. It is stored within these curricula. So at night, when you, well, it actually stored and then it's being processed. Sorry, it's being processed when it comes in. So when it's processed, it first goes through the primary curricula. It goes through the processing. And then the harmful radiation that comes with it, because it comes with gamma radiation, it comes with X-ray radiation, because even with some radiations that are more harmful than gamma radiation, it comes with all of those radiations. And so the curricula does process that. And then the harmful radiation from the primary processing is eliminated through the third ventricle of the brain.
The third ventricle, you said?
Yeah, the third ventricle. That eliminates the waste from that first processing. And then the good product that comes out of that, it goes to the secondary curriculi. That processes it too, and then the waste from that goes into the fourth ventricle. So that eliminates that too. So now go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll finish that. I have another question, but go ahead.
Okay. So now the pure intelligence that came from the universe is now stored waiting for darkness, waiting for night to come so that the pineal will start to process it. So it then goes through the processing of that intelligence by basically breaking down serotonin, okay? Now
serotonin, what does serotonin do for us then?
Well, serotonin is used in the brain, you know, for giving you the sort of extra action, you know. That's why people say that, you know, you have a lot of serotonin, you become hyperactive and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's mostly used during the day.
But serotonin also gives you creativity, it gives you ability to dream, it gives you a lot of things, serotonin, right?
Well, not quite creativity, though. Serotonin won't give you creativity. The reason for that is that, you know, it's mostly works with the right brain. And so because of that, people become anxious. You know, there's anxiety associated with serotonin. And at a state of anxiety, you are not going to be creative at all. In fact, you know, it also is responsible for turning on the switch in the brain that increases your heart rate. See?
Oh, increase it. So we need this melatonin to help create the concentration to give us a whole brain interlacing function, right?
Right, yes.
And then how does the spiritual law of healing fit into all that?
Okay, now this is what happens. Serotonin that we use, like I was saying, it breaks down at night and then it forms melatonin. Now, how do we get serotonin? We get serotonin from different kinds of foods, like tryptophan, you know, bananas, plantains, goat meat. Those give you tryptophan. And tryptophan is in the blood circulation, so the pineal takes that and then breaks it down to give you serotonin. And then at
tryptophan,
night, serotonin.
You're saying tryptophan is made into serotonin.
Yes, tryptophan.
Okay.
Yes. And so at night, serotonin is broken down and then to form melatonin. So in fact, when melatonin is being produced, serotonin is not in use at all. Now, what happens is this: the pineal manufactures melatonin and then it sends it to the temporary memory, and then temporary memory sends it to all the organs that we need it. The reason why temporary memory does that is that it's for the power of concentration, because now you have universal intelligence. See, this intelligence has to go to your kidneys. This intelligence has to go to your heart. This intelligence has to go to your brain. This intelligence has to go to your lungs, everywhere. So what happens now is if you have a problem, say, for instance, I had a stroke. You know, this is in 1994. I had a stroke with my right hand paralyzed, completely paralyzed. And then my voice gone completely, and my memory, you know, after so many years of education, college education and everything, my memory was completely almost gone. I couldn't count from 10 to 0, Alan, you know, in 1994.
How did you heal that?
Okay. Well, this is what I did. I was in the hospital, you know, and in fact, I had a second stroke. But what happened was my associate brought me the Wonder Wheels games. And since the Wonder Wheels games are all numbers, you know, I emphasize numbers. I started working on those numbers, and I was actually, as I played the game, I was calling the numbers loud. You know, I was playing the game about four or five times an hour.
This is a game that you devised, Wonder Wheels.
Right, yeah, that's a game. In fact, the name again has a history behind it. The history behind it is this. You know, this is a long story. I hope we have like about 3 hours to cover this. But anyway,
we don't. We only have another maybe 20 minutes or something. But anyway.
Okay, yeah, let me just go briefly. You know, in 1996, we were working with an autistic student, you know, about 16 years old. Now, this student couldn't count, he couldn't read, he couldn't add or subtract. In 6 months, we took this student from where he was. In 6 months, he was able to read a second grade book. He was able to add and subtract. He was able to even multiply. So his aunt, after seeing us work with him with those wheels, he said, well, why didn't you call it the Wonder Wheels? That's how we got the name Wonder Wheels.
Yeah, but anyway, what is it? What is it, and how did you heal yourself from such a severe condition?
Right. The fact that I was calling the numbers consistently actually caused the waves to go into the brain that was affected by the stroke. It went in there, the particle, because it blocked the center of speech and the center that controls my right hand was all particles, was the particles sitting there. So what happened then was, as I played the game calling the numbers, they actually created the waves that then went and melted the particles, and then the particles cleared away, and then I regained my hand back and my voice.
I mean, you're giving us a whole new understanding of medicine and science that the West doesn't even understand, you know, and you said you were healed in 4 days from that stroke.
In 4 days, yes, in 4 days. You know, and also, I had prostate cancer. In 2 years, I healed myself completely. No medication, no doctors, nothing. Again,
and how did you do that?
Well, again, like you were asking about focus, I had to direct, a target of thought to where the pain was. In other words, first of all, and that's what is important, why people need to get the materials that we have. Let them buy the video, you know, the video set. It's all on the website. Let them get it so they can start to understand. Now, what happens is that you are now able, you know, you are able to get rid of all the distractions, you know, all the mental wandering, you know, all the worries. You get rid of those, and then your mind starts to probe your body. Your mind starts to go, you know, to your heart if you have a heart problem. In fact, I had serious heart palpitations, too. I healed that completely. Never saw a doctor. No medication. So what happens is that your mind goes into the area where the problem is. So once your mind targets that particular area, your ability now to get rid of the particles that sit in there is all a matter of getting rid of that particle, you know.
And people you get rid of that heavy particle. You're saying the heavy particle causes the illness.
Yes, yeah. That's what causes the illness, yes.
And you know, it's like saying ways of thought to lift the heavy particle out of the system.
Right, so, yes. You lift the, because of your ability to increase your concentration. The key is the concentration, because like we said, you are getting universal intelligence, the intelligence of the universe. That heals everything, that cures everything. Once you get, you tap into that intelligence, you are able to overcome your own insecurities.
And that concentration is able to send waves of thought to an area to help lift the heaviness of the particle. But you have to have the ability to concentrate. That's the key, right?
Right. You have to have the ability. That's why we have these materials. You know, people can go and look at it, 2 books and 3 videos. You know, that's on my site. You know, www.
Right. The site is Dogon University. That's DOHGONUniversity.com. And if you look on that website, you can see all the tools that Professor Moma is making available from the Dogon wisdom tradition.
Right.
So the underlying basis of all of this, is there one like spiritual law that we should remember just to kind of, because this has just been a little taste of the ancient wisdom. What can people remember to get them on track, you know?
Well, it's very simple, Alan. You know, the great Imhotep once said, know thyself. So you investigate yourself. You know who you are. You know what your true needs are. Don't look at someone else who is doing something wrong and you say, I want to be like that. See, the thing that's wrong with Western science is that they have all these images, you know. People want to be this image. People want to be that image. Well, most of these images have their own problems, you know, that they won't tell you. But you want to be like they are, then you're going to pick up on their falsehood, on their pains and everything. That's why people carry pains. They don't even know where the pain is, see?
Because they don't know themselves. They're trying to be like everybody else.
Like everybody else, yes.
So without you say know thyself, which is it's a tradition that goes back all around the world, that wisdom.
Right.
The Greeks,
that's the key. But how do you know yourself again? That's the question.
Do you go
yourself.
Back to Mali ever to visit the ancestors there, the priests there?
Have I ever been there? No, I haven't been there yet, Al.
What's that?
I said, I haven't been there yet. I'm planning on going there pretty soon.
Uh-huh. It would be great to go there with you and actually document these.
Well, that'd be wonderful, Alan. So why don't we start talking about that?
Okay. We go to Mali, huh? You're going back to Mali.
I'm not quite sure yet. But, you know, we can talk about that.
Okay. One more question. I mean, we still have a little bit of mind. Now, you also talk about how to read somebody's mind with the same wisdom, right?
Right.
Now,
yeah.
How do you explain that?
Well, the easiest way to do that is to first be able to understand how to read your own mind. And the way you do that is you understand how your senses work. For instance, your sense of sight, how does that work? Your sense of smell, how does that work? Your sense
how
of,
does it work? Can you tell me how it does work? I mean,
right. You know, each one of these senses are symbols. In fact, on the site again, you can see the Eye of Huru. Now, inside the Eye of Huru, you see all the senses and you see thought. What happens is that you can look into somebody's eyes after you have studied yourself. Now, I have several books on this now. You know, I have written some books that actually people can order for. So I would suggest maybe you can give the website later on. I'm going to be posting most of these book titles on my website. So please, for the next couple of days, please go to my website, and you will see these titles. So
that's dogonuniversity.com, D-O-H-G-O-N, university.com. But yes, tell me then, because I see it on your website. I see what you say here, don't eyeball me. And within the eye, it seems like there's all the sensors, smell, sight, thought, sound.
Right. Yeah. So everything is in the eyes, so this is how you read somebody's mind. You know, I can look into your eyes, Alan, and I can say, oh, Alan, you know, there's something wrong. You know, what happened to you last night? You know, are you all right? You know, so I can see because of the fact that, you know, the symbol that represents your thought, you know, is not going to be the shape that it normally is.
You actually see something. You actually see a symbol, huh?
Right. Oh, yeah. That's not, you know. That's what is in there. So you can look at each one of those, but again, you've got to be able to read the eye. So in fact, now we are entering the science of iridology or iridology, you know, iris, the iris. Yeah. So this
you see
is
the emotions
very
in the eye. You see the emotional qualities in the eye.
You do. You know,
you have to know what to look for.
But
you have to been trained to know what to look for, right?
You have to be trained, yes. So these are systems that people can buy the book. You know, I have a book on it now. I have, you know, Alan, in about, I think, 2 months, I'll be able to write about 5 books on this subject. So people can, that's why I'm saying, let them go to the website and they can order for these books. Please, if, you know, we don't have the, you know, the titles on now. So please, for the next couple of days, go to Dogon University and you'll see these titles.
Next, because the titles are on the website now. This includes the codes of intelligence. Intelligence can be defined as the foundation of the universe, right?
Right, yeah. And, you know, again, there is a formula for intelligence, which is not the IQ kind of formula at all. You know, in fact, the IQ is deceptive because they talk about chronological age as a ratio of chronological age to mental age. That is not true. That is not the formula for intelligence at all. The formula for intelligence, you know, has to do with a unit. And you have to be able to discover that unit. And that unit comes from a code. Again, you've got to be able to understand what the code is. So once you understand what that code is, and then you unravel that code, then you now are associated with universal intelligence as well as your own individual intelligence. Now you can be able to define what your own intelligence is. And basically, you know, the simple formula for that is focus over concentration.
Focus over concentration, but the code you're talking about comes from where?
The what?
How do we understand the code, and how do we
unravel this? Okay, Alan, the code. The way we understand the code is simply by being able to be very, very fluent, Alan. You know, you've got to be very, very fluent in doing this meditation, counting backwards from 100 to 0. You know, let me just give you very briefly. A couple of weeks ago, probably about 3 weeks ago, one of my students here in Los Angeles came to me and said, "Well, Brother Momo, I really am serious. I really want to open the pineal gland." I said,
okay.
Well, she's been asked. Sorry?
Yeah, no, I'm following you. Okay.
Yeah. You know, she's been asking me for over a year. I want to open the pineal gland, but somehow the ancestors didn't tell me that she was ready yet. So she came to me about three weeks ago. She says, "I'm serious. I want to open my pineal gland." I said, "Okay, great." I said, "You come with me. Let's sit outside." So I did the meditation. I did it for her. I said, "First, I'm going to do it silently." So I did it silently, and I did it for about 25 seconds, you know, from 100 to 0. Then I said, "I'm going to do it aloud." So I did it loud, and I got about, I think, 35 seconds. So now I said, "Okay, now you do it just like I did it." I said, "Do it silently." So she did it. She got about, I think, 45 or 50 seconds. Then she did it aloud, and then she got about a minute. So I said, "Well," I said, "that's not too bad at all." But believe me, the following week we went to class, this lady was telling me everything that she never, ever knew. In fact, the term that we came up with, lacing, she's the one that came up with that word, lacing, you know, brain lacing.
So
I said, "What?" I said, "Where are you getting this from?" She said, she told me, she says, "Well, Brother Momo," she said, "all this week, things have just been opening up to me. Everyone is telling me that I'm different. I'm different." I said, "Well, that's it. Your pineal gland is open right now." So these are the
you helped
that
open this by that simple exercise of counting backwards from 100 to 0.
That's all it takes, Alan, you know. And that's why I was saying the creation of the universe was by 1-2-3-4, then space, 9-8, then space, 27, then space, 99-100. It's that simple. There was no Big Bang. Everything the scientists have said about Big Bang is a lie.
I still have to, I'm still not sure about understanding. I'm going to have to study your website. We're just about out of time because we only have about an hour to do this show. But I'm talking to your Professor Moma Salusele-Lehi.
Swalaye, yes.
And you're the Dogon from the Dogon University of Thought in Long Beach,
right.
California, right?
Right.
Yes. Do you have a telephone number you want to give out?
Yes, definitely. It's 562-434-6494.
I mean, I know there's a lot more to talk about, and we'll do more shows, but, I mean, this is just a taste of the vast wisdom you have, you know, to share. I mean, there's whole shows we can do just on the ancestors.
Right, exactly.
And then the website is dogonuniversity.com, D-O-H-G-O-N, university.com.
Right.
Is there any, like, final words you'd like to say to the audience before we
sign
off?
Yes. What I'll say to the audience is for them to get these materials now. You know, let them get started. These are things that will save them a lot of time. It will give them longevity of life. It will give them the power, you know, because people give away their power to someone else. We need to be able to take back our power. I mean, we are not destroying anybody. You know, what we're doing, we are all getting together to make the planet a better place for us all to live so that all these problems will never happen. So that's it, Alan. I thank you very much. And please, if you can, give me a call so we can continue to talk.
Yes, I will give you a call. I've been talking to Professor Moma Salusele-Lehi.
Swalaye.
a Dogon high priest and the head of the Dogon University of Thought. Thank you. I will call you back. Thank you for sharing some of what you've been offering the world.
All right, Alan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is Alan Steinfeld and New Realities, and you can hear me every Tuesday at 7:30.
West Coast time, 10:30 East Coast time. You can check my website at New Realities TV. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and I welcome your comments and suggestions for this radio program at bbsradio.com. Thank you for listening, and I will close with that song that I opened with, which is the Song of the Soul. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. I'm Steinfeld and New Realities. See you next week.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Robin Avery. It's a privilege to be on BBS Radio. You've been listening to music from my new release, The Way You Hold Me. Come visit me and check out the CD at robinavery.com.